Folks, I've got a really important announcement to make. I'm taking a leaf out of Nokia's book, and I am personally forming a broad strategic partnership with Microsoft. In this, we will use our complementary strengths and expertise to create a new global mic ecosystem. Individually, we'll focus on our core competencies, but we're going to integrate key assets and marketing initiatives to align on the future evolution of compelling mic products. I hope that I've got your support in this endeavour.
You have.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
You can leverage my assets anytime.
That's absolutely... That's fantastic to know. So, welcome everybody to Season 3, Episode 4 of the Tux Radar podcast. I'm Mike Saunders.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
And I'm Efrain Hernandez.
And we'll be talking about...
Sorry.
And we'll be talking about Nokia, who I've just referred to, throughout this podcast, amongst many other things. We've got our discoveries, we've got Mego, we've got our You Dare Us in the dock, and many, many other cool things that I see Graham is really excited about.
I can't wait. Yeah, this is, you know, I just love this part of the fortnight. It's my favourite day.
There we go. That's the honest truth. And if you love what we do, you'll love our magazine, Linux Format, which you can subscribe to at tuxradar.com/subscribe,
and that's awesome. Thanks, Mike. As right. usual, a brilliant job of introducing the podcast. Now we should start with news, shouldn't we?
Well, you know, last podcast we tried something different, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We started with something other than news.
Yeah,
and we're going to do the same this time because
daring.
You wrote down discovery of the week, GM.
Cool.
So that means we have to discover things again, which this is another episode of fail for me.
I've got two great discoveries. Shall I start while you work out if you've got anything to discover?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Excellent. I discovered two things, yeah. I discovered that through an interview with the people behind the Mageia Magura.
We really need to find out definitively how to pronounce that, don't we?
Yeah.
What would be even better is if when people start a new software project, they don't call them stupid names.
I agree with that.
You
yeah.
pronounce completely differently according to whatever your first language is.
Exactly, yeah. So perhaps the Wikipedia page for Magoyiria has some sort of phonetic spelling for the project. But
I don't care if it does. I want a name that is obvious how to pronounce.
There we go. Well, perhaps this relates to my discovery. I discovered that when Magiuiua, the Mandriva fork, started, 600 people volunteered to contribute.
Yeah.
And now the number of people who are active in it is 50.
That sounds all right, actually.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's more than I expected because you get so many people at the beginning who say, yeah, I'll design a logo or I'll make a theme tune. A lot of people...
Yeah, I'll make a contribution to open source.
Yeah, who would do that? But there was a lot of kind of noise on the mailing list that I was watching of people who... had good feelings and good sentiment towards the project, but really weren't going to do anything. And now it's settled down to about 50 people. So I think it's a good message to say when you start a project, you can expect a lot more support initially than what you'll end up with. But it's still great there are 50 people behind it.
It's very easy to say that you're going to help and contribute to a project, and it's quite another thing to get around to doing it.
I'm sure we'll find that out later.
Those 550 people, they may come back and make some contribution at a later date.
I'm sure they're all making their own forks of Mandriva at the moment.
The distro formerly known as Mandriva.
With an LXDE-based desktop. And my other discovery was a game, a platform game called Siobhan Action. And this is a Mario-type platformer ripoff that's designed to be as infuriating as possible. So if you imagine a Mario game where you jump for a block and it moves out of your way, or you try and jump over a hole and a block appears in the gap in which you're jumping and knocks you down, and everything that can go wrong does go wrong. Now, I saw this on YouTube a couple of years ago and was really entertained by it, but I actually found that somebody ported it to Linux the other day. So Siobhan Action is well worth trying. Just to make you rage, of course. So those
are the graphics legit?
Yes, they are, because they're terrible. So they're not official Nintendo intellectual property. They're just I was going to say paint drawn graphics, but not even that. MT paint drawn graphics. So
that's brilliant.
There we go.
Awesome.
Well, I've discovered some stuff.
Oh, thanks, Andrew.
Yeah.
Well, I've got two discoveries this fortnight. One of which is what happens when you install Google Chrome on Linux Mint. I made the switch from Linux Mint, more on which later, and I'm generally more than happy to accept whatever default software is in there, unless it's OpenOffice, in which case I swap it with AbbeyWord.
Hooray!
So I'm quite happy with bumbling along with Firefox and thought I'd just give Google Chrome a go. And after you've installed it and opened it up, the first screen it gives you is a selection of themes, and one of those themes is the Mariah Carey theme.
The Mariah Carey theme.
So this is, this is in 2011, this is the pinnacle to which free software has brought us. I feel like Tenzing Norgay, hauling heavy things.
How are those themes rated by Google? Are they by popularity?
I don't know. But
it's a weird thing when you click on the themes page.
I'm quite happy to have Mariah Carey on my desktop.
Really?
Yeah.
But anyway,
the other one is Linux Mint. I mentioned a couple of podcasts ago that it looks too much like Windows for me. The big start menu down in the bottom left. And that opens up to a favorites and a my computer and all that sort of stuff, rather than the standard no menu system that I'm used to. And my discovery is that it's really, really, really easy to change it to however you want it. You just right click on the Linux menu, the Linux Mint menu icon in the bottom left. You right click on that and press remove from panel, and then it's gone. Brilliant. And then you right-click again, and you can add other things to the panel, one of which is the standard no menu system.
It's brilliant. Great.
I always get scared by those context menus, because they're all remove from panel, or then remove panel, and I think I'm going to end up with nothing. It'll be like going back to the Big Bang.
But if you remove all the panels, so there are no panels, then you right-click again, and then it just says create panel. Or
are you sure
panel.
It will do that? Or will
sure
it just
it
say start
that.
X term?
I guarantee it.
I've definitely been stuck in that place before where I can't add a panel and there's nothing visible on the screen.
Yeah.
And I've had to just delete all the dot GNOME files.
Maybe I'll do some sort of video recording type guide.
Screencasting.
Maybe I'll do a screencast and put it up on Tux Radar.
Wow. Well, be careful what promises you make.
The empty promise makes the most noise.
My discovery, we've been in a meeting all morning, and so I hadn't actually written down what discovery I would make, but I just went back up to my machine and clicked on the back arrow in my terminal to see what I've been doing. And what I've been doing, I'll talk about in a little bit, what I failed at doing was actually doing something with the Amarok source code. But part of building Amarok was using a tool that I can't believe I haven't come across before. It's called C-Cache. It's a compiler cache.
Yeah, I've heard of this, but I don't know much about it. Go on.
Well, all it does is it caches your compilation. So it unfortunately only works, I think, with C, C++, Objective-C. But if you're building a project with Make and you're using one of those languages, C-cache caches all of the binaries so that it doesn't have to be built. Only the new part is built. And that's different to the way it normally works, where the Make will normally go through everything and see what's changed and then rebuild and relink.
Yeah, Make won't build all object files again, will it?
This is another step towards caching and optimization. So it means, Amarok took, 20 minutes to build on my machine. With C-cache enabled, when I started changing lines, it took about the same time to just run through Make or Make install again. So it you couldn't tell, in fact, that it was rebuilding the parts that I changed, because C-cache was working.
But what bit does it rebuild then? I mean, I thought if you got a good Make file, then it will...
Yeah, I agree. But unfortunately, I wasn't able to test it with and without C-cache, because I just used C-cache from the beginning, because they're part of the Amarok build instructions.
Right.
But I have got I have built lots of projects like this before where my machine has ground to halt, even when I've changed only a few lines in Make, going through things. And even when I've changed relatively little, it still takes ages to rebuild. And it seems like Ccache is a massively optimized cache.
This is great. This must be a special boon for distro build systems.
Yeah,
they're making
right.
packages again yeah, and again yeah, every yeah. day.
And so I haven't gone into any deep analysis for it. I just did it as part of the Amarok thing. And it's been around for years as well, but it's the first time I've come across it. And it seems like a fantastic tool if you're building stuff with C, C++.
Great.
So that's my discovery.
And that just leaves Effie.
Following the previous conversation about spreading the word of Linux through Latin America, Paul Hudson guided me towards a user group in Mexico, based in Mexico, is the UbuntuMX.org user group based in Mexico. And basically all they do is they, as any other user group, they spread the word regarding, in this case, Ubuntu. But they're also trying gradually to build a website to be a source of information regarding Ubuntu, specifically in Spanish. And they're starting to create new blogs and forums and just basically just general information about Ubuntu, which is really good. I think this is the first user group in Latin America that is dedicated to one particular distro in Mexico specifically. So that's my discovery of the week. Nothing related to chimichangas or burritos. Or
it's kind of
tacos.
Related to chimichangas. Well, chimichangas are the national Mexican.
It's the homeland. It's the homeland of But there's not cookery.
Does Miguel de Acasa go to this user group?
He might be. I don't know. I'm gonna have to find out.
Are they working themselves towards an Ubuntu MX distribution?
They might. I think that what they're trying to do is they're trying to encourage people to contribute to design new applications for Ubuntu in Spanish. So that
well,
might
not
be,
just translations. Actually.
No, just translations. They're trying to contribute with new tools and applications.
Like
so on
a
and
Mexican
so on.
SNES emulator.
It might be.
For Mexican ROMs.
Mexican ROMs. So, yeah, that's my discovery. Well, it wasn't my discovery. It was thanks to Paul Hudson. So,
well, it was a discovery by proxy.
By proxy.
Who?
Paul
Some
Hudson.
Guy called
Is that Andy
Paul
Hudson's
Hudson.
Brother?
Yeah, he was that guy that used to do our look pages, I think.
the ginger lad.
Yeah, bless him.
Is he ginger?
Don't know where he is.
He's ginger, yeah.
Ginger.
In spirit.
In spirit.
Bong! Hear that? It's the news time! Yay! And as I alluded... you know, and I saw many years ago an interview with Dermot Mahernaham, you know, the British news presenter. Peter O'Hanrahan. Whatever his name. Dermot Mahernaham. And he said that he got really annoyed because he would be walking down the street and people would go up to him and go, bong, like that, doing News at 10 theme tunes to him. So
you've lost the news!
You've lost the news. So poor bloke, but, you know, in...
From this day forward, people are going to do that to you.
People
right?
are going
to
do it to me as well.
So you released that software under a beerware license, hoping people would buy you beer, but instead you're going to get bong.
I'm going to get the bong license as well.
You can see none of us actually want to talk about the damn news.
But we're going to anyway, listeners. We're going to anyway, because there actually is. There is some quite major news this time as well, and everybody who hasn't had their head in the sand in Mars for the last couple of weeks has seen that Nokia and Microsoft, or Nokia, depending on how you pronounce it, have made a big strategic announcement. So Nokia is going ahead with putting Windows Series Phone Series 7 series on all of its high-end smartphones, presumably by the end of the year or next year. There isn't a time frame set out yet.
They're going to wait for an update, aren't they, to Windows Phone? It's going to be the first major update to Windows Phone that they'll ship on the Nokia devices.
Is that with like copy and paste?
So they've promised that they won't ship the current version.
Right.
They're going to wait for the first Microsoft update. Presumably they're privy to that information.
But, okay, so this news might not seem particularly amazing. You know, big company ties it with other big company, but Nokia has had a big hand in open source. They open source Symbian for a while at least, didn't they? And, of course, they control Qt now. They've jumping straight in bed with Microsoft.
So is this coming on on the back of last week or a couple of weeks ago, where Nokia and what was it? They fell out with Mego or Mimo.
Well, no, I think the news that we mentioned a couple of weeks ago was the fact Canonical were going to put Qt in their Unity.
Qt is going to go into the next release of Ubuntu. It's going to be
literally the day after, I think, the last episode. This is the news.
Well, they had Stephen Elop, the CEO of Nokia, initially releasing a memo was leaked.
Yeah. We talked about that, didn't we?
Yes.
Yeah.
Saying that they had a burning platform. Apple had made this whole iOS ecosystem with iTunes, and Android was building up, and Nokia had nothing. Nokia sells many, many, many more handsets than any other company, perhaps all other companies combined, with the 20 trillion candy bar mobile phone handsets a year. But Nokia has no place in the high-end market at the moment. It's all Android and iOS. So what are they going to do? They thought about going with Android, but then they thought, well, this would make us like any other handset provider, like HTC and Samsung, where we're just shipping Android. So they're going to be the only major player to go full on Windows Phone 7, but it does cause concern for us in the free software world.
Yeah, they're a big kernel contributor. In the past, they've made big contributions to GNOME, and obviously they now own Trolltech and the Qt API.
Mm.
I think it's a massive news story in general IT terms. I think it's a real coup for Microsoft, who up until now didn't have anybody taking Windows Phone seriously.
Their lucky stars this.
Yeah, so the new CEO and Steve Ballmer, they've struck this deal. It's a kind of a bargain at midnight. And, you know, Microsoft get a very, very serious contender for mobile phone dominance on their side. And Nokia, presumably, you know, maybe even Nokia become the only people to sell Windows 7 phones, you know.
Well, maybe at the start. I mean, the big question is what's going to happen to Mego now. Nokia said that they are still going to announce or release.
Mego's dead.
Well, they said they're going to announce a Mego-related product this year, but that could mean anything.
And I'd like that for a long time now. I mean, I have to look back over our podcast notes, but for a long time we've said that Mego is really a pile of rubbish. Yeah. I know lots of people have invested a lot of good time into it, and I think the Netbook OS is pretty half-decent. But what we've always criticised is Nokia's and Intel's lack of any reason for the convergence on a smartphone platform. We could see no logic behind Mego on a smartphone, and they never showed it. The versions of Mego I've seen running on a smartphone have been abysmal, terrible, and they've not been able to, you know, it's been years and they haven't been able to compete with Apple or Android. So Mego is dead, and as from a business perspective, I can understand what they're doing. But on a massively worrying scale, I don't know what this means to the Qt API. There are lots of independent people using Qt, so it could have a life outside of Nokia, and I really do hope they sell it.
Well, yeah, fingers crossed, we'll see. We'll talk about it in our open ballot in a while. Another piece of news in the mobile world is that Microsoft is not allowing applications released under the GPL3 license in the Windows Phone marketplace.
Is it just GPL? Or?
It's GPL3. They don't seem to have a problem with BSD license or Apache license or MIT.
That's interesting.
Well, yeah, I think it is an interesting point because, you know, our initial reaction is, evil Microsoft, because it's typical Microsoft to pull off this kind of move. But I saw a good comment on OS News from a guy called Kolstrom, and he says, the Windows phone market uses digital signatures. Section 6 of the GPL v3 requires the disclosure of any methods, procedures, or authorization keys required to install and execute modified versions of covered work. So, given that the Windows marketplace, like all mobile phone marketplaces, use
keys for everything,
keys and signatures and like, then Microsoft can't back away from that with their business model.
Yeah.
So it's
they're not going to bury their heads in the sand either, like Apple does.
Exactly. Yeah. So this basically had to happen. So
Microsoft is really just being a good citizen and obeying the terms of the GPL.
Well, depends on how you look at it, doesn't it?
That's how I've chosen to look at it.
Yeah, but it's not a normal case of Microsoft being evil's oars, even though they are a lot of the time. But in this case, the GPL alone prohibits people from distributing works like that with signatures and DRM and the like.
Surely it puts Microsoft mobile devices at a big disadvantage, because there's a big bunch of free stuff out there that you can't get if you're running Microsoft Mobile, Windows Mobile,
Windows Phone Series, Phone Windows Series, Phone Series, 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 7 Series,
Software Collection, yeah. 3.
Release Candidate 1. Yeah, I think reducing, obviously these are complicated legal things that they have to work around, but reducing the amount of software that you can have in your store.
That's never a good thing.
Yeah, you know, we all used to laugh at Apple having 20 billion different apps in the App Store because they'd be full of fart apps and the likes. But it seems to have worked for them. So, yeah, why not try and encourage more and more software? Why not encourage porting great free software, great open source programs to your platform?
Well, it's good for us, isn't it? It's good for Android if Android is us. You know, it means that free software developers are going to be less likely to develop for Windows Phone 7, which is a good thing. But it's the ambiguity over Apple Store and its position on free licenses as well. There are a few free software projects on there that still exist on the Apple Store, even though the legality of that is ambiguous. There are SDL libraries for iPhone. You know, where does that all fit in? And
there was VLC for the iPhone, but that was pulled because of the complaint.
There's Unity, the mono-based game framework, and of course there's MonoTouch itself.
Yes.
You know, I don't know. I don't think it'll be a big disadvantage to Microsoft's application store, and probably a good thing for Android development, if Android development is a good thing for Linux and free software, which I'm not convinced it is.
Well, and if you're writing an app for Android, it doesn't immediately mean you can release it for Linux.
Yeah,
because, well, what we call Linux in this podcast is a desktop with GNOME or KDE or a billion other window managers.
You mean GNU / Linux.
GNU / X11 / BSD / Linux, but we talk about Android and the like, but that is the Linux kernel with a whole entirely different layer on top. So I guess we'll see. Next up is a news story that we've all found really difficult to get our heads around. And this is to do with Banshee, the music player.
The new default music player.
Yeah, it looks like the next version of Ubuntu, which will be 11.04, will include Banshee as the default music
player.
The
mono-based Banshee.
Mono-based Banshee, and not, instead of Rhythmbox.
Not Rhythmbox anymore.
Rhythmbox is gone.
They
kaput.
Can't spell Rhythmbox.
Veg, fuch. So then,
Banshee, easier to spell.
So spell it how you see it. Sorry, Mike.
Banshee's in there. Graham will probably have to correct me on this, but Banshee used to tie up to the Amazon. Banshee had a link that you could buy songs from Amazon.
It's integrated as a plugin, I think,
with
as
Amazon.
I remember. Yeah, it's a plugin for stores.
And if you bought something via Amazon inside Banshee, then all the profits, all the money they made, went to the GNOME Foundation.
I don't know the specifics of it, but when you have an affiliate code and you send that to Amazon, a proportion of the profit gets given back to you as an affiliate. You know, it's like following a link to Apple's App Store, for example.
Yeah.
So, yes, that affiliate money goes back to the GNOME Foundation if you buy music through Banshee.
Through stock Banshee compiled from sources upstream on their website.
Yeah.
Now, Canonical want to use Banshee in the next Ubuntu.
Well, Canonical released a version of Banshee that switched that affiliate code to one for Canonical, so that instead of them, this is pre-1104. So they did this kind of, it annoyed a lot of people. They did this so that the money then went to Canonical. So instead of the charity, the GNOME Foundation, it went to the business model that is Canonical.
So you're still buying songs from Amazon, but that little cut was going to Canonical.
You didn't know. Nobody knew. Now, to their credit, Canonical, I think, responded to the criticism of this. And they gave an option, as I understand it, because they gave an option to the Banshee developers. Right, what do you want? We can't let the app Amazon saw in Banshee default to payments to GNOME Foundation because we're trying to run it as a business.
Right.
So you can either do that or you can drop the Amazon store as the default online music purchase interface for Banshee and we'll feature Ubuntu Cloud instead. So I think the Banshee developers then decided, okay, well, we're not compromising. We want, you know, if we're going to have the Amazon store in there, we don't see why we should change the affiliate code. You do what you want. So they went with the Ubuntu One online store through Banshee.
Right. Does the Ubuntu store also go via Amazon or
No, they've got their own. It's quite easy, in fact. There are a number of companies that will do MP3 stores for you. And I can't remember the name of the company that does it with Canonical, but Canonical have bought the service through a third party. This third party has made all the arrangements with all of the record companies.
It must be quite a lot of arrangements then, if you compare to the likes of Amazon and iTunes.
Yeah.
To be able to have a
Yeah, and that's what competing. This other company does. They might do it. They might also do it for Sony mobile phones.
I see.
Well, not Sony mobile phones, but they might do it for lots of other different platforms. So the options aren't. You don't have as many options for buying music. It's also more money because the Amazon MP3 store is really competitive when it comes to pricing.
It's an interesting news story because there are no easy answers. On the one hand, the Banshee people. I can understand that they feel aggrieved by the situation that Canonical changing their code. Yeah, on the other hand, they were releasing their software under a completely free software license, which lets people make the changes they want. So I feel more on their side that Canonical should have done the right thing for the community and left it the way it is.
I think so too.
It's not like they're short of money.
You know, if Canonical are making lots of hundreds of lines of commits to the Banshee project and making massive improvements to the media player, then fair enough, they can change the affiliate code. They kind of deserve it. But actually, the only line they seem to have changed is the one that changes who gets the money is the same as changing MicOS to GrahamOS.
Which many people have done anyway.
I use GrahamOS, it's much better.
Well, you know, it's probably worth forking a distro on that basis anyway.
I don't know. I mean, it's only in the whole time this has been running through Banshee, I think it's earned them something like the GNOME Foundation, something like $3,000.
Yeah, so it was about $3,000, wasn't it? Yeah.
So it's not big amounts. If Canonical are really scraping for $3,000 to make their business plan work, then I feel a bit sorry for them.
So in terms of money, it's not very much at all, but it is a very small slap in the face.
Yeah, and to the GNOME Foundation, that's probably quite a lot of money.
Yeah, it could be. So let us know, listeners, what do you think of Canonical's move there? And finally in the news, it looks like Fedora and OpenSUSE have given up porting Unity to their distros, at least for the moment.
Oh well, never mind.
There's Adam Williamson in Fedora and Nelson Marquez in OpenSUSE. These guys were working on porting the Unity interface that's going to be used in Ubuntu to Fedora and OpenSUSE, but they said due to time constraints and bugs and wanting to wait for more fixes from upstream that they're not doing it at the moment. So it's not, at this stage, it's not a massive world-quaking announcement, but it kind of surprised me that Unity would be so difficult to port anyway. I mean, normally window managers abide by certain X specifications and shouldn't be so hard.
But it's
hard.
Not going to be an X specification, is it?
Well,
it's going to be a Wayland specification.
I guess it goes deeper than that.
I don't know. I mean, I think I only saw the one post, and reading between the lines, not the words, it sounded like they were pretty annoyed at the way they've been treated by the Unity development community. Unity development community. So, I don't know. It sounded like they just had enough of trying to chase this thing that was impossible to chase. It's maybe the Unity project is badly managed.
Who is in charge of Unity? Is it a Canonical thing?
Yeah, it is.
Right. Well,
so, I mean, yeah, we've all tried it. We've all installed packages and tried to get it to compile. And even recently, even like weeks ago, it just seems so fundamentally broken that you can't believe it's going to be in a final release of a distribution in a matter of weeks.
It's been like a month and a half or so since I tried it, but it doesn't look good, no. And if it's not going to be easy to port to other distributions, if it's not going to find its way into other distributions, then Canonical is going to go off down their own path with it, and they're going to become so far divorced from other Linux distributions that how is it all going to fit together? Who knows?
I don't know. Right, it's time for You Dare Us. It seems to be I get the chance to host the sections where I fail the most. It's the You Dare Us, which two episodes ago we challenged ourselves to make some contribution to some open source or free software project. Last episode we mostly failed, and this episode I've mostly failed. Really sorry.
That's all right. I forgive you.
I've just been really busy.
Yeah, well, you are the editor now of Linux Format Magazine.
Yeah, but that's not...
This issue just gone was paused last as the full-time editor.
I think...
Don't beat yourself up about it.
No, but it's interesting.
It's not that important.
It's interesting to look into.
We'll live and we'll die.
I think it does say something about what we were talking about earlier, about it's easy to make a commitment at the beginning of the Magia distribution. It's easy to say, this is what I want to do. This is what needs to be done. It's quite another thing to actually sit down and put the time in. I did spend yesterday afternoon, hours yesterday afternoon, trying to fix a bug in Amarok to try and make some contributions. Whoa. But I just couldn't do it in time. Firstly, it took me about an hour and a half to get the source code compiling from the Git repository. There were problems that just meant it didn't work. It crashed on startup. So I had to go through the source code. Don't really understand the source code. Commenting out lines so that I could just get to the bit where one of the bugs and KD bugs lists could be identifiable and then I could try and fix it. That was really, really complex. And then actually trying to decode the part of the source code that I needed to change to be able to fix the problem that was listed on the KD Bugs database was really difficult. Anyway, I must have wasted about 3 or 4 hours doing this, and I had absolutely no success whatsoever. The Amarok source code is the wrong place to start. It's very, very difficult to understand. And you can see why projects like that need such a dedicated group of developers who know the source code in and out to be able to make changes. So I am sorry.
Yeah, but you put the time in. It's the effort that counts.
It's the fail.
It's the thought that counts. So
I did try.
You tried hard, and you failed.
Yeah. How about you? Did you fare any better, Mike?
Well, I didn't actually manage to succeed in my original goal, whatever that was, translating ZSNES into German or something. But I did actually make a 32-bit binary of Siobhan Action, the platform game I was talking about in my discovery of the week. Because I went to the website, tried to download it, got a binary package that said Linux x86, where it was just a tarball, extracted it. And it said something like, cannot execute binary file, which isn't a very helpful error message, but as all those Linux users know, have been using for a while, you have to unfile on the actual file then to see that it's a 64-bit binary. So I thought, right, this is stupid. So I got the source code. I think it was on CodePlex, which is that horrible Microsoft thing. But I built it and generated a 32-bit binary and gzipped it up again to a tarball. And I sent it to the developer last night, a lovely guy called Wei Ming Zhu. And I said, here you go, it's a 32-bit binary for your site. And he said, oh, sorry, I didn't realize that the last one was only 64-bit only. And he's put my binary up
on
his site.
Awesome. That's really cool. Awesome. Did you change the title to MicOS game?
Trademark. So yeah, I've contributed a 32-bit binary of a ridiculously frustrating, infuriating platform game to the open source community.
32-bit community.
Yeah, just the 32-bit community. But the thing is, I often feel like doing that. I put together games on the Linux format disk every month, and I try them out, and I try compiling them, and I have all sorts of problems. But I'd love to do that more if I had the time. Just make binary packages. Statically linked, if possible, binary packages. That's what we need more of in the Linux world. Just temporarily, people can download a program and try it, at least quickly, before it gets into their repositories. So, Andrew.
Well, before I talk about my contribution to open source, I'd just like to say that I've only just now put my finger in some chewing gum that someone stuck underneath the table.
What flavour is it?
I don't know. I'm not going to put it in my mouth. I'm not going to put my finger in my mouth now. But
we can stop this while you're going to clean
it. I just want to say that, you know, you
don't put your hand in your hair.
People go to work from, you know, 9 till 5. That's 8 days. 8 days. 8 hours. Sorry. We spend an awful lot of time on this in our working environment. The least people can do is respect the people around you and try and keep it clean. Yeah, I tried making a deb, but it was really hard. I had a look at Viking, which is it was in. I got it from Hotpix a few issues ago. Nick said that there was only the source code, so I looked at that first. But then it turns out that there is actually a deb of that. And then I looked back through previous issues of Hotpix for some fairly cool software, and I got quite a long way into it. I'd compiled the source code and I was downloading dependencies for Knitter, which is a knitting application, and then found really, really late on that there was a deb already. But it didn't say anywhere on the project page, it didn't say anywhere on SourceForge that there's a deb. It just says download the Windows version, the OS X version, the source code. If there is a deb, just don't make me waste my time trying to make a deb for something that there is already a deb for. So I've decided now to make an RPM for something instead.
So you failed as well.
Well, No, not really. I still think of it as a work in progress rather than a concrete failure.
No, that's a failure. You've got nothing to show the good people who listen to this podcast
I've got
now.
A really minty finger.
Yeah, don't anger him. He's put his finger in chewing gum.
Was it really that middle finger?
It was. It was that finger. It's the long. It reaches further. It's the longest one. So it's you know, it's going to find more stuff.
You know what? I feel for Andrew because Deb's R files, which nobody uses, AR, and RPM's a CPIO, which nobody uses, at least last time I looked into it a few years ago. So they're both ancient archive formats that nobody cares about. If they're all tarballs like Slackware packages, it'd be a lot easier. Put your files together, put in a little control file and a description file. Bob's your uncle.
Well, anyway, I found the Fedora wish list, which is a big list of programs, applications that the Fedora maintainers want someone to make an RPM of. So hopefully no one will have made those into RPMs yet, and I'm going to give it a go. I know this constitutes a failure in terms of this podcast, but in terms of actual the entropy of open source, I hope to carry on making a contribution in that way.
There we go.
Okay, well.
Entropy win.
And that leaves us with Effie.
The Effie.
How did you get on, Effie?
Yeah, I think I did all right.
My
challenge was to redesign a distro logo, and I chose Crunchback Linux to as my challenge. I think I did all right. I think I've finished.
So you did
it.
Do it. You did actually.
Yeah, I have done it, but I'm not sure whether it's the finished version or the first finished proposal. So that I think I'm gonna leave that to the.
I think it's a very brave thing to do.
I'm a very brave man.
Yeah, I know what the communities around distributions are like.
Are you going to send it to the Crunchbang team, your proposal, then, as a big SVG or something, and say,
yeah,
boom?
I got a PDF and a PNG already done, so ready to
I'll
be
put them
sent.
Up in the notes.
Yeah, we're gonna put it in the notes. But yeah, it's done. I'm not sure whether it is the finished piece or not. I think it would be good if people see it and give me their opinions.
No, don't say that.
No. So we cancel that. Cancel that. but yeah, that's already done. That's my contribution done. Thank you very much.
I think you win, actually, because you're the only one that's done what you said you'd do.
And I'm going to go and join the Ubuntu MX.org user group.
Ubuntu fork.
Just to go to one of the meetings, because I can imagine that the meetings are really good. In a cantina, eating tacos, drinking Corona. I like that idea. So,
bye. Los chimichangos.
Los chimichangos. So there you go. Yeah, I finished my challenge.
Awesome.
Hey, Effie wins.
Effie wins.
But we need a new challenge. We're not going to do that again.
No way. Never ever again am I going to. Apart from releasing
sleepless nights over that, feeling bad about it. We haven't actually got a good idea, have we?
No.
Did you have an idea in the pub?
What about. No. Oh, wait, no.
Challenge.
Oh, hang on a minute. Didn't we say we would try to come up with a new mascot for Linux? Given that the penguin has been around for a while.
Everybody
now,
laughed at that idea.
I think it's a great idea because the penguin was chosen because Linus Torvalds was bitten by a penguin, apparently. So, you know, the penguin's been around for a while and, you know, it's sitting there looking like it's just had a great big bowl of herring. And let's all come up because we can draw them in the GIMP or any other top quality graphics program, and then
that sounds all right. That sounds doable.
Yeah. There we go.
Marvelous.
Well, it's a challenge for everyone.
Yeah, challenge for all of us for the next episode.
New mascot for Linux.
Oh, that's good.
He has a competitive advantage over us, given that he knows how to use.
No, I'm gonna give you some advantage. You start first.
No, Effie has to do it at the command line because we're all otherwise Linux geeks, but Effie's the art geek.
Oh, 1980s, that is the command line.
Effie needs to do it in binary. I use on a SNES.
And anyway. So endeth the You Dare Us section. I'm actually hosting the next section as well, which is
double section.
I know.
Double section.
In the dock. in the GNOME panel doc. And this
episode, I use XFCE.
This episode's victim is Mike Saunderson.
Hello, konnichiwa. Ohayo gozaimasu.
You're going to try and convince us that there are too many identical distributions.
This is correct,
Graham. It's a very brave thing to try and
do. I am going to be murdered immediately as soon as this podcast is released by Linux zealots, but I'm going to try.
Well, let me shake your hand.
Thanks.
Hang on. I'm getting a text message.
What?
It's from Caitlin.
Oh, no. What she said?
She says, tell that Saunders lad he's dead when I see him.
Right. It's like too many breakfast cereals, is it? So what have I got? I've got 1 minute to justify my position.
Well, to try and convince us that your position is right, yeah.
Okay, I can do that in 20 seconds.
Good luck, Mike.
Thanks, everybody.
Right. Go for it.
Right. Listen to these descriptions of distros from distrowatch.com. WatOS R3, a lightweight Ubuntu-based distribution featuring the LXDE desktop. Peppermint OS, an Ubuntu-based distribution featuring the LXDE desktop. Sorin OS 4, a lightweight Ubuntu-based distribution featuring the LXDE desktop. Lubuntu, a fast, lightweight, energy-saving Ubuntu using the LXDE desktop. Ultimate, an Ubuntu-based distribution featuring the LXDE desktop. Why? Why? These are all identical distros. I am not anti-distro proliferation. If you want to make a distribution suited to blind people, brilliant. If you want to make a distribution suited to construction workers, brilliant. But everybody making an Ubuntu-based lightweight distribution featuring the LXDE desktop, work together. You're making the same thing. All this redundancy and duplication is pointless. You could all make something better if you stopped. Oh, I've got my own little favourite distro project. Do it.
Well done. That was good.
Now, you all probably hate me, but it's the truth. Having used Linux and written about...
Okay, the minute is over. That's it. You can revert.
Having...
Lovely, cuddly
Having written... That's just exact. Having written about Linux for the last 10 years, I know that the plethora of distributions does confuse
Mike.
People. So,
it's all right. Calm down now.
Please. Yeah.
This is the second time in 2 days that Graham has touched one of us.
Yeah.
I just
put my arms around
people
in the team.
I had bad dreams about that last night.
We've still got the photos to prove it.
Right. And on such crest of an idea wave, we come to what's it called?
Hot seat. Hot topic.
We come to the hot topic.
Open ballot.
you little scamp, you. We come to the open ballot, which is normally a yes or no question, but whichever fool put it up, neglected
Graham.
To phrase it in such terms. So we've got a load of...
What is yes or no? Does Ubuntu have does Qt have a future, yes or no?
So can we really believe that question, Mark? Will Qt be alive and healthy 12 months from now, or is it really destined for just when the micro-Nokia deal gets into full swing, question mark?
Yes
too
or no?
Too many questions. I want one question. Anyway.
Okay, you can do it next time.
All right, I will. And it'll be miles better than this.
Arguments.
So, what we asked was, in the wake of Nokia's bombshell announcement that it would team up with Microsoft, as we mentioned earlier, the Finnish mobile giant, that's Nokia, claims that it plans to launch some kind of MeeGo-related product this year and that Qt has an important role to play in it. But can we really believe that? Will Qt be alive and healthy 12 months from now, or is it really destined for the dustbin? Qt destined for the dustbin?
No. No, it's an incredibly valuable API used by lots of people who pay vast amounts for a commercial
license.
It's
really expensive,
isn't it? In fact, they don't tell you the price. You can't find the price online.
But you have to get
a quote. It's several thousand euros per computer, and that's per individual user, so you can't share that computer. And I don't actually know the current price. It's only when I have the guts to ask them. It's very expensive. It's used by lots of 3D software people. It's used by people like Industrial Light and Magic, and of course Google for Earth, Google Earth. That's cute. It's used in all kinds of places. It's used in the automotive industry. is lots of user interfaces in car entertainment systems using Qt. All of those people don't care that Nokia owns it. So I do think it will be healthy. I think it's not as good for the future of Qt that it might not be in Nokia's hands, but it's better that it exists.
Absolutely. Ross Kendall says, Qt is a great cross-platform development toolkit, and thanks to heavy investment by Nokia, has stretched from desktop to mobile. It is LGPL, and it's quite amazing. Technology is good for a myriad of use cases, not just for Nokia's mobile strategy.
Yeah. Yeah. Will live and KDE, of course. I mean, I don't think we've mentioned KDE, but it is the power behind KDE.
Thank goodness Qt was GPL. I am a KDE user, and KDE is safe, even if, at worst case, they have to fork it to keep the freedom. That's from Kevin Collier, a regular of this parish. You said Qt. What do you actually meant Qt, Graham? Jerry Cornelius says, Qt, Qt, who cares? Never bothered to learn how to say it. Thankfully, KDE sunk any interest I had in Qt with their software compilation.
Ooh.
As Kirk said of the Klingons, let them die, XFCE forever.
Yay! Respect of that guy, whoever he is. Isn't Qt guaranteed to be free due to the KDE Qt free foundation?
Yes, well, it's LGPL, as someone said, so right. You know, it's as free as it gets, effectively.
Okay.
There are... Obviously, it gets massive investment. I don't know how many full-time developers there are on working on Qt, but it really benefits from having a professional company behind it. The documentation in Qt is far, I think, far superior to almost every other open-source API. You know, there's regular professional releases, and we get exactly the same version that people who pay thousands of dollars for would get.
Not wishing to sound like a Luddite or anything, but is there a point where Qt can be almost finished and it doesn't need constant updating and new features? That it's effectively a full-blown, powerful toolkit for the modern day, and it's all right if nothing happens for the next couple of years?
Well, yeah, I think that's a good point. And in fact, on the Linux desktop, very little has changed in the Qt API for a couple of years. The emphasis has been on making it work on mobile platforms. Mm. So it's the creation of new widgets that will work with a pointy touch interface, or it's working on a list view that you can scroll and doesn't have scroll bars.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing is changing all the time. And so I think there is a need for a subset of it to change and adapt to whatever the new technologies are. But yeah, on the desktop, it hasn't changed anyway. So
well,
right.
Perhaps that's the case. Yeah, it's a finished product. Yeah. It doesn't need loads more new features.
Well, Hugh says, Windows 8 will be based on Qt, and so will Graham's hair.
Does that mean my hair's cute?
Well, we're all sensitive people with so much to give. And Bananumerang says, I imagine Qt will be forked into some stupidly named project that no one can pronounce. Then again, Qt isn't easy to know how to pronounce either, considering it looks like Qt when it's cute. Maybe they can fork it into cute, actually spelled correctly. Maybe Qt is how you spell it in Finnish. Maybe it'll be called ugly or B-V-I-R-F-J, but I digress.
Brifske.
I don't know, I like it. I think the digression is awesomeness on its own. Gert says it will be forked by the KDE people under the name QT. That's Q-U-E-T-E. Phelan Whiteley. Hello, Phelan. I think the more interesting question is whether Nokia will still exist.
Yeah, Microsoft could buy Nokia.
Software is where they can make a difference. Actually, a few people have said that Microsoft could buy Nokia.
Did you see Phelan also said that he deleted his dot?
Amarok
files, and yes. The RSS was working for him.
I did see that, yeah.
Hooray, there we go.
Thankfully, Qt has the GPL to protect it, so at worst it will still be as good as it is now, and KDE could essentially fork it for their own should the central repositories disappear.
Yeah. Might be good for KDE, because the whole thing would then become a single API, which is what we've talked about in the past should perhaps happen.
That'll need KDE 5.
Rather than KDE essentially redoing,
reinventing
the QT wheel.
Yeah.
Yes. Spacey Jace says, I reckon it does. See, this is the question. This is the problem when you don't phrase things in a yes or no question. I reckon it does. Qt is more than just the smart mobile platforms. There are cross-platform applications that put Qt to good use, e.g. Guitar Pro, just off the top of my head, especially in the Linux platform, which is soon to include a plethora of tablets and the like.
I can't remember if Qt runs on non-smartphone devices. There are still a lot of handsets that Nokia churn out that aren't in the smartphone band.
I think that's an important thing to mention, although it's slightly off topic here now, but when people are saying, well, this could be the end of Nokia, they'll die with this Microsoft agreement, we've got to remember that Nokia made 85 octillion candy bar phones a year for the rest of the world, and their smartphone business is very, very small.
And Nokia make the cheap phones, don't they?
That's what I mean. They make, the hundreds of millions that people
China
buy.
China and India.
Yeah, Brazil, BRIC countries.
They're not about to go under because of this announcement.
But today's smartphones will be next year's ordinary phones for everyone else.
It will take time. It might take another... It might take
5 years.
A while.
But 5 years, Nokia totally failed in the smartphone arena.
Maybe that's the case. Maybe in 5 years, today's smartphones are the normal phones of 5 years down the line. But that means that for 5 years, Nokia have got an awesome business model. They're going to make a huge amount of money in the next.
Yeah, but
years.
It's a dead end, isn't it? It's a no through road. They've got. This is why they're in such dire straits, because they have not been able to capitalize on the success of iPhone and Android. I mean, 70% growth. For Apple, it's amazing.
But they're not going to disappear anytime soon, like some of the naysayers say, do they? They're still going to be the biggest mobile phone seller in the world for many, many years.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, obviously, the profit margins on these low-end £10-20 candy bar phones are much, much lower than on your iPhone and HTC devices. But they've already... We're only talking about one chunk of their market, their smartphones.
Yeah, and it's a small chunk of the market.
Yeah, whereas they are the manufacturer of the 25 million phones they sell every day in China and India and the like.
Barry Van says Qt and KDE will become indistinguishable. Nokia is in a bad position. They're looking to become the only handset manufacturer with a single smart OS, except for Apple, which controls both handsets and OS. They're putting all their eggs in one basket, which means they'll be lucky to get much space on the shelf in phone stores. If Nokia wants to maintain a position in the smartphone market rather than just the feature phone sphere, they'll need to diversify their OS offerings. If Nokia wants to survive, they have to keep Qt going. I'm not sure I follow the logic there.
Nokia have failed to capitalise on Qt. I think they've had it for a couple of years. They've known this is coming. They've seen the iPhone 3 years ago. You know, they should have products out there by now with their new vision on and working. That's what the problem is. There isn't, I don't think there are people with the vision or the influence at Nokia to make it happen. So they're basically offloading all that vision to Microsoft.
More optimism from Ross Kendall, who says Qt is a great cross-platform development toolkit, and thanks to heavy investment by Nokia, it has stretched from desktop to mobile. It is LGPL, and it's technology is good for a myriad of use cases, not just for Nokia's mobile strategy. So I think what the consensus is that Qt is not... what was the original question?
Does it have a future?
Does it have... Well, that would be a yes or no question, and that's not how it was written.
That's how the title was written. That's the title is what people were responding to.
What?
The title of the entry on the blog was
all right.
Does Qt have a future?
Qt has a future. We can believe that Qt will be alive and healthy 12 months from now.
Great.
It is not destined for the dustbin when the micro Nokia deal gets into full swing.
It's answered all of those questions.
All of those many questions. Only one of which is a yes or no question.
You've just got to believe.
I do believe, and
change we can believe in.
There's marvellously, Anonymous Penguin didn't say anything of any note. We've got a couple of comments from Anonymous Penguin.
Wasn't there a haiku in
rubbish.
There somewhere?
Hang on,
we can't read it out, can we?
There is.
Why is it offensive?
Who's the haiku? Holster says. It will die, a slow, painful death next year. It will die.
Oh yeah, that's fine.
Is that 17 syllables? So, great. But yeah, overwhelmingly positive it sounds.
There's a lot of love for Qt, isn't there?
There is.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the beauty of the open source licensing structure. If a company decides that they like technology XYZ, they can sponsor it, they can work with it, they can hire as many developers as they like to work on it. But then if they decide to jettison it, that work stays out there and we can all build on it, and it's not going to go away anytime soon. As people have said, all the work that Nokia have put into it can be the seeds sown can be reaped by the KDE project. It's not going away.
And with such cutie cuteness, love, we come to the end of this podcast. Hang on a minute, isn't something meant to happen now?
Yes, it's the one more thing.
Oh, that's right. I'm supposed to interrupt me? No, you. No.
We haven't got one, but I can do a silly robot voice.
Go.
Hello, my name is Graham Morrison, and I work for Linux Format Magazine.
That is unbelievable. And please let us know, listeners, whether you want a normal one more thing or Graham's robot voice every single episode, because Graham is willing to do it.
Yes. I would be happy to do that.
Yes. So there
can
we
you
go.
Can you do it in Spanish?
Dos cerveza, por favor.
That's really cute. That's fantastic.
Can you say like a pig tied to, in a cage on antibiotics?
Like a pig tied to a cage on antibiotics.
This is far better than any one more thing I've ever done. So
yes. Yes, it is, Mike Saunders.
Can you say, see you in 2 weeks, listeners?
Yes, see you in 2 weeks, listeners.
Bye bye. He's
got a call with that robot.
Completely random.